So we're on Daf Mem Hey Omer Aleph, and we're really about to enter into the main sugis of Muktzah, which, as I mentioned before, Muktzah is a sugya that takes up so much of Masechta Shabbos, you can almost make a Masechta out of it.
How come they didn't?
Because I think they felt that it's kedai to organize all of Shabbos into one Masechta. Okay, then. So here's where we're going to start. There's a line in the Gemara, I'll tell you exactly where it is. It's called Hahi Rabbi Shimon Hi. And it's one line before the end of Mem Dalet Amud Beis. But we're really starting on Mem Hei Amud Aleph. I just want to give you a little bit of a background, you know, to sort of ease our way in. And the Gemara says the following. Hahi Rabbi Shimon Hi. The Lesley Muktzah. Now you may remember that I've mentioned this to you in the past more than once, that Lesley Muktzah is a very extreme formulation of Rav Shimon, and it's not accurate. And we always have to figure out what the Gemara means when it says that Rav Shimon Lesley Muktzah. Rav Shimon doesn't hold from Muktzah, because in truth, in fact, Rav Shimon, and I would say even in most cases, agrees that there is an Issur Muktzah. Now, in this particular context, which is very important for us, Lesley Muktzah means that he rejects the Svara of Migu. In other words, the Gemara says in the previous sugya, which was the sugya of the wagon, if you recall, with the wheels and so forth, that if there are mos on the, in this case, on the wheel, and then the mos were removed sometime during Shabbos, then the Issur Muktzah dissipates, meaning the wheel, which we said, it's not exactly like our wheels, but their wheels had a receptacle element to it, and therefore they had a status of a kli. The question is whether it's a kli unto itself, or it's tafel, it's secondary to the wagon, to the muchni. That depended upon whether it was nishmetes or lo nishmetes, whether it was attached to the muchni in a permanent way or just in a temporary way. But be that as it may, what we proved from the previous braisa, which I'm not going to go over now, if you want, we'll find time for chazor for that, is that if the mos are removed at some point during Shabbos, then the Issur Muktzah dissipates. It completely terminates. That's called Muktzah as a basis ledavar asur, which means that the muchni is holding on to the mos, and therefore the mos becomes the muchni becomes a basis for the mos. And yet, paradoxically, even though the mos were there on the muchni, and the key time period of when I say they were there on the wheel is when? Bein HaShmashos, as we enter into Shabbos. Nevertheless, the wheel only retains and maintains its status as bosses l'dover asur, as muktzah, as long as the mos are on the wheel. But once the mos are removed, sharia. And that's the previous few lines in the Gemara here. The Gemara says, Ha'ein olea mos, if the mos were removed, sharia, it's mutter, meaning you're allowed to move the wheel. Afal gav, even though, da'avi olea b'bein ha'shmashos, even though the mos were sitting on the wheel on as we entered into Shabbos. And the Gemara says, in order to justify that, we have to introduce the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon is the one who holds Lesley Muktzah, which means Lesley Migu. And what is Migu? Let's just review what Migu means. We've discussed it on many occasions. Migu diskatzoy lebein hashmashos diskatzoy lekuliyoma, that once it was Muktzah entering into Shabbos, even if the reason for the Muktzah was removed, it still retains its status as Muktzah throughout the balance of Shabbos. And whose sheet is that, if anybody remembers?
It's Rabbi Yehuda.
Excellent. Rabbi Yehuda. But Rav Shimon disagrees with Rav Yehuda, and Rav Shimon is the one who says Lesley Muktzah. Shalom Aleichem, Avi. How are you?
Good morning.
How are you managing in this weather here?
Difficult.
Okay, you have your, what do you call that in Britain? We call it an umbrella.
Umbrella
also, okay, good. Okay.
Oh, all this bad luck.
Okay. But at Harvey, you can close the umbrella. Here it doesn't rain yet, although I don't know. Okay.
Training now?
Yeah, but I'm saying in this movie, doesn't, he's opening his umbrella. I said it's a little late for that. You
know. Okay.
All right, Harvey, here we have a seat for you.
Thank you.
You know, just you can take off your jacket if you like. You know, you take off your gloves, whatever you like. Just make yourself at home. I know my Rebbetzin spoke to your Rebbetzin, so
yeah,
we worked it all out. Now,
you call her my Rebbetzin?
It's just a way of expressing someone's loyal and trusty wife. Which you have to thank Hashem, you have such a loyal and trusty wife, and that I know, because she's always concerned about you, Harvey. Always out for your well benefit. And she got a lovely husband, so there's, you know, like, it's in Ve'agefen, bin Ve'agefen. I don't know when your next anniversary is, but if you're making a party, just invite me. All right.
What are we up to now?
We are on Daf Mem Hei Omed Aleph. We'll have to find you Gemara.
Which one?
Somewhere it's here. We just have to locate it.
Down.
I don't know. It usually is down there, but I don't see it there now.
Over there?
So, Harvey, be a little patient. We'll get to it. It may take a minute or two, but we have you in mind. Now, Rabbi said, just that we don't lose any precious time, the previous sugya, which maintains that as long as the mos are on top of the wheel is mukta. But once you remove the mos, it's no longer mukta. That sugya happens to be authored by Rav. Rav is a first generation Amora. Actually, in one place in Shas, he's called a Tana. That's how close he was. His uncle was Rav Chia, who was a Tana, and he was a Talmud of Rav Chia. Rav happens to hold, as we'll soon see on Daf Mem Hayim and Omen Aleph, like Rabbi Yehuda, who accepts books and accepts Migu. So we're in a little bit of a bind over here, because how could we say A and B at the same time? A, that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, which means he accepts Migu, at the same time, Rav holds that these mos, which are sitting on the muchni, as soon as they're removed from the muchni, you're allowed to move the muchni. Then you're undermining the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, it's very nice for you to tell me that this brisa reflects the shita of Rabbi Shimon, who rejects migu. But the one who quoted this brisa was Rav, and he seems to have signed off on this brisa and accepted it, and yet Rav himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And now the Gemara is going to try to prove that, in fact, Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda. So that's the top line on Daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph. And this is more or less where we were holding. We got a little bit further, for those who remember, and we spoke about the Chabarim. Okay, let's just remind ourselves who these Chabarim were. These were members of an anti-Semitic group that could not tolerate Hanukkah. They would endanger the lives of Jews if the Jews were to light their Hanukkah candles publicly. Do you remember this, Harvey?
We
covered, I think, about a week ago or so. And the Gemara wants to know what happens when Hanukkah overlaps with Shabbos and you've lit your Hanukkah candles outside publicly, and now it's a problem of mukta, because the ner, that the receptacle that holds the light of Hanukkah going into Shabbos, was mukta. Obviously, you can't light Hanukkah candles on Shabbos. You must have lit them before Shabbos. The receptacle, which is called the ner, is therefore a basis l'davra asur. It's the mukta because of the shemen and the psila, the lit wick that's being held by this ner. And now you want to move these Neros on Shabbos.
Because of danger.
Correct, because of danger. So the Gemara says that once the candle goes out, you're allowed to move the Ner. And why? Because if the Chaborim would see your Ner Chanukah there, even though it's not lit at this point, but nevertheless they know why you put it there and what you did with it, that could possibly endanger the lives of the people. Now, the Gemara says Rav would allow you in this case, because of these extenuating circumstances and the possible danger from these Chaborim, he would allow you to bring the Neros inside your house. So the Chaborim would not see them and you would be spared of any sort of danger. The Gemara says apparently, if not for the fact that there was this element of danger, then Rav would have prohibited it, because which means that since you lit the Ner on Erev Shabbos, even when the Ner is extinguished, it remains Muktzah throughout the entire balance of Shabbos. But the only heter here that overrides the Iser Tiltal Muktzah is this danger element. Oh, so here's the rub over here. It's close, Harvey, but we have to avoid Sakonis Nefoshos. I'll tell you why. Because if it was Sakonis Nefoshos, then Rav would have been matir straight away, outright, without looking for any possible heter for it. Instead, what Rav does is, he says the following, listen to the language of Rav, Kedayu lismoch al Rabbi Shimon b'shas hadchak. It's worth it for us to fall back onto the sheet of Rav Shimon, who rejects Migu, and he says that once the candle goes out, you're allowed to move the Ner, even though we don't paskin, and we don't accept, at least Rav doesn't accept the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, he accepts the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, but we know what? As a fallback position, we're going to rely on Rav Shimon because it's a Shas Adchak. Nowhere does the Gemara calls it a Shas Sakana Mamish, because then even Rabbi Yehuda would have been matir. That's called Pikuach Nefesh, which overrides everything. But here, we're going to fall back on the position of Rav Shimon. So let me read to you the language of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Hachinami Mistavra, the Rav ka Rabbi Yehuda Svirle, that in fact Rav accepts the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar Rav, Manichim. This is more complicated. The question is, you know what, at this point I'm going to fast forward only because of time. You'll press me if you decide that you want me to go over the sugya of Shabbos and Yontif with regard to a tree. Okay, I'll just give it to you very quickly without going into detail. Chachomi made a separate gzera, separate shvus on Shabbos prohibiting the use of a tree, because they're always afraid that if they allow you to use and benefit a tree on Shabbos, you might be tempted to break off a branch and maybe even take off a fruit from the tree. Who knows what it could lead to, and therefore you're not allowed to benefit from it. And the Gemara says that in certain situations, we can differentiate between Shabbos and Yontif, in which case Yontif becomes more chamor, which is paradoxical, because usually Shabbos is much more severe than Yontif. But in this case, since there's no Iser Muktzah with regard to the Ner, if he leaves the Ner on top of the branch of the tree, then on Yontif we're afraid that he'll remove that Ner after it extinguishes, is because on Yontif there's no problem in doing so. So therefore he violates the Iser of Shimush Ba'ilon, of Ben. Whereas on Shabbos we're not even afraid that by letting him light his candle on the branch, he might be tempted to move the candle. He wouldn't be tempted to move the candle at all, because it's muktzah for the entire Shabbos. And that reflects the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, Nigud is katsoy lebein hashmashos, is katsoy lekuliyom. Okay. So Rabosai, we're ready for the new sugya. And I'm very, very excited, because this is really Muktzah with a capital M. Okay, now you have to find the place. The Gemara starts with Boy Minei Reish Lakish Mi Rabbi Yochanan. So let's count from the top of the page, approximately 10 lines down. The last word that we don't need for today is Hadchak, right?
Where is that?
Can you count 10 lines down from the top of Mem Hayim and Aleph? Mem Hayim and Aleph.
Oh, this
okay,
one.
Yeah. Everybody have it?
What is it? Gemara.
In the Gemara, what we did last time, which would have been approximately 8 days ago, I don't know, I'm not counting, but Kedaihu Rabbi Shimon Lismoch Olav B'Shasadcha. And in my Gemara, they have a period after that. So it should be about 10 lines down from the top. I didn't count it. And then it says, Boy Minei Reish Lakish Mir Rabbi Yochanan, which means that Reish Lakish asked his Rebbe Rabbi Yochanan the following question. Chitim Shezron Bekarka. And now, if you're hearing this for the first time, it's brand new to you, but these are famous words. You know, these are, you know, the students of Talmud know these words by heart. Chitim Shezoran Bekarka. It's a very famous sugya. Okay, now here's the point. When you plant something, it takes a long time until what's called hashrasha. Okay, then?
It
so
roots.
If I, it roots, correct. So we can write down the word hashrasha. Okay, I'm not sure. Okay, good. This looks fancy. So we have Zriya, which means what? Planting, right? And then we have, which takes place much later on, Hashrasha. Okay, which means it's rooted in the ground. Okay? Now, here's what you have to know. This we'll call stage one, and this we'll call stage two. Our discussion today about Chitim Shezorim Bekarka is going to discuss or address this period of time between one and two. Let me explain. If I were to lay down on the top of the ground a seed, and let's say you could eat that seed, it was edible, right, there are many seeds that are edible, then that's before Zriya. No problem if on Shabbos you want to eat those seeds. The fact that something is laying on the ground doesn't make it muktzah. Now we get to stage number one, which is called Zriya, which means that I, on Erev Shabbos, I took that seed and I put it into the ground in such a way, in such a position, that if I leave it as is, after a certain period of time, let's call it 72 hours, depends on many different factors, but generally Hashrasha takes 72 hours, it will take root. But right now, we're in between 1 and 2. Now, if we're before number 1, so the Zriya hasn't taken place, that's clearly not Mukta. If we're beyond stage 2, then we have a different issue. Forget about Mukta. We have an issue called Meleches Kotzer, which is called what in English? Harvesting, I think. I don't know. Okay?
Yeah.
So, this is one of the 39 malachas. Now, if I rip something out of the ground after it's already taken root, I violate one of the 39 malachas. So that's a no-no. That's not even an issue. Our issue today is going to be between 1 and 2. The Zriya took place, but it's not yet Hashrosh. And if Hashrosh hasn't taken place, there's no Meleches Kotzer. But what there might be is what? Mukt. Why is this a Mukta issue here in this period of time? Whoops. Sorry about that. Right? Why is this a Mukta issue?
It's been designated.
Exactly. David's right. It's been designated for Hashrosha. I put it in a place where, if all things are equal, I have no intention of taking that seed out. I was intelligently and deliberately placing the seed in the ground so that it would take root and it would grow. All of a sudden I decide, you know what, I'm seedless, I need a seed. You know, my Gary Nim truck didn't arrive on Erev Shabbos.
For the salad.
What do you say? I need the seeds for my salad. So the question is Muktzah. And this case of Chitin, Shezoran Bekarka, is going to be the exact field, I don't know what word to use, the exact territory of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon that we've been referring to over and over and over again. Whereas Rabbi Shimon less lay mukta and Rabbi Yehuda is lay mukta. Until now, we've been focused mostly on migu. Rabbi Shimon said, okay, I it was mukta on Erev Shabbos, I lit the candle, but now the candle went out. I want to use the oil, I want to use the nair, I want to move it, I want to enjoy it. Rabbi Shimon was very broad-minded about it. He was very permissible. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, you lit the candle on Erev Shabbos, it's out of your range, out of your league, you have no intention to use it, it's designated for the Isser of Shabbos, and so forth and so on, it's Mukta. But now we're getting back to the more basic issue of Mukta, which is the Machlokas Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda. Later we have to link up the two, as I indicated in the past, and see how they're interdependent. And this machlokus is going to be, what happens if I designate something in a place, in a location, which indicates that I was not interested in it? Okay, what does that mean, not interested in? That's called hesech hadas. Okay, now for lack of a more, you look in art school, you see how he translates hesech hadas, I don't know, the English scholars on this, I'm not such a scholar, but just in my vernacular I would call it, he puts it out of his mind. Now when I say that he puts it out of his mind, what is that the opposite of?
Kavanah, intention, muksa.
Theta?
Designation.
Okay, what's that called, Lashon Kodesh? As I told you in the first lecture that I gave you on books. The same meaning but a different word. Because I want to use the word that the Torah uses. I like to follow the biblical, the scriptures. Hakanah, exactly.
That was a hint.
Okay? So Hesech Hadas is L'chora, again at first glance, again we prima facie, we may change our mind about this because this is certainly Rabbi Yehuda's approach, I don't know about Rabbi Shimon, but at least in Rabbi Yehuda's frame of reference, Hesech Hadas is the non-existence of Hachan, the absence of Hachan, for our purposes, okay? That's just a rudimentary, the language, because the terminology is very important here. So the terminology here of Rabbi Yehuda is going to be Hesech Hadas. So as soon as I put the Chitim through Zriya into the Karka, that's called Hesech Hadas. I put it away, I expect it to grow, I have no intention of using the seeds and putting them into my salad, as David said. That's called Mukta according to Rabbi Yehuda. Here's another case of very similar kind of case, parallel Hesech Hadas, and that's the case of a Beitzah. Beitzim Shetachas HaTarnagolos. Now watch what goes on here. In the old times, again, I don't know if this is so common today. I mean, it's more common for those who raise chickens, but for those who, are marketing eggs, this is not so common. But in the old days when they would raise chickens, and they still raise chickens today, if you go to a chicken farm, you go to a kibbutz, what they do is, they have the hen sitting on top of the egg. It's almost like an incubation period of time. And that allows the egg to develop and become what's called an efroch. You remember we spoke about efrochim in the past, the little chickies, right? So now once he puts the egg underneath the mother hen, he's indicated that he's not interested at all in eating the egg, he's interested in growing the egg, to develop it as an efroch. Once again, Rabbi Yehuda is going to apply the logic of Hesech Hadas, which is the opposite antithetical to Hachon, and therefore it becomes Muktzah. So let's read it again.
Where is that?
10 lines down from the top. Chitim shezoron bekarka ubeitzim she. Again, he has the word nisunim here. In the if you have the misifti, he says beitzim she nisunim tachas atarnagolas. So where did he place the egg? Underneath the hen. Correct. Mahu. What's the law? Now, what we're going to see here is the following. Did Reish Lakish not know of everything that we discussed here about Hesech Hadas and Muktzah For sure he knew all this. So why was he vacillating back and forth? All this is true for sure, without a doubt, according to whom? Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda is Leib Muktzah. Reish Lakish wanted to know, and he asked his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, what about Rabbi Shimon? Could it be that we've crossed the line and even Rabbi Shimon would accept this as Muktzah? Let's see in the Gemara. Mahu. Ki lesle le Rabbi Shimon Muktzah. When does Rabbi Shimon reject Muktzah? Like, for example, in the case where he lit a candle, but what did he expect to happen with this candle? Again, how much volume of oil is in the candle? A lot or a little? In Rabbi Shimon's kula of lesle Muktzah. I'm looking at blank faces and I'm getting really nervous.
Not enough.
A small volume. You follow? Because remember the Ashishos case where even Rabbi Shimon agrees that he added so much oil into this large pan that he expected it to, I called it the 24 hour yardside candle. You know what I'm saying? He didn't expect in his wildest dreams that a wind would come or somebody would come and blow out the candle, a guy would come and blow out the candle. So if he didn't anticipate that, that's definitely Spitz Hesachedas. But in this case, so again, let's read it again. Ki lesle le Rabbi Shimon Muktzah hecha delo dachye biyadayim. He put it on the side, but he anticipated the possibility, maybe even the likelihood, of having the ability and having accessibility to use the object during the course of Shabbos. Here, though, what did he do with these seeds?
He planted them.
If he planted them, did he have any hope or any dreams or anticipations that somebody was going to, you know, decide that they want to rip out the seeds from the ground? Hecha didachye biyadayim. But here, in this case, where he planted the seed on Erev Shabbos, or he put the egg where? Underneath the hen. Islay Muktzah. Even Rav Shimon would agree that there's Muktzah. Oh, Dilma, perhaps, I don't know. Lo Shna, it makes no difference. And even in the case of Dachye B'Yodayim, this would not be Muktzah. Now, I'm going to get into deep trouble here, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Does anybody remember, by chance, a case that I gave you where perhaps even Rav Shimon would agree that it's Dachye B'Yadayim? We haven't seen the Gemara yet, because the Gemara is here. That's what we want to learn today. But I mentioned it in all my introductory shiurim, and I thought maybe someone might remember what we discussed. But don't only answer once, because the Gemara says you can't hear two voices at the same time. The trouble with you guys is you don't like raisins. So how do you make raisins, Rabbi? In the old days, I don't know. Today they
on the roof.
Exactly, you put the grapes on the roof. Now, the very moment that he places the grapes on the roof, that's called Dachye B'Yadayim. So those two words have to sink into your brain. You have to know it in the middle of your sleep. Dachye B'Yadayim. And it could be that in the case of, it's called in the Gemara's language, which we'll get to now, grogros v'tzimukim, which are different kinds of grapes that you put up on the roof, and the hot sun beats down and they become very sour and eventually they become dried fruits. And I just came from a country, by the way, where you can't walk five meters without seeing another store that's selling dried fruits or fresh fruits. I mean, that's what they're famous for. Okay, I'm not telling you to go there just for the fruits, but it's nice to have good fruits, because that's about all you can eat in that country. Everything else is trafe. And I met one, unfortunately, a Jewish person who told me she'll eat anything except for scorpions. That's the only, that's too far for her. She said for them it's like eating bamba, you know, they love that stuff, but okay, whatever. So we have something called the process of drying fruits, and that's called Dachye B'Yadayim. Why? Because what's his intention? He's not going to eat it when it's sour, right? Why is he putting it up on the roof?
To dry it off.
To dry it off, but he knows that during the drying off period it becomes very sour. I'll give you another example, which I mentioned to you about a week ago or so. Let's say you have a garment. Garments are not mukta on Shabbos, but this one is getting really worn out.
Shabby.
Excellent. Shabby. It's called bolui in the Gemara's language. And he takes it and he throws it into the rubbish. That's again another case of dachi b'daim. All of a sudden, he realizes he left his umbrella home, and the only thing he has to cover his head is this old shabby piece of cloth, this shmata that he threw into the rubbish, and now he wants to take it out of the rubbish. Could be, again, these are all issues that depend upon Rabbi Yochanan and his response to Reish Lakish. Even Rabbi Shimon would agree that that's muktzah. So again, what we're seeing in front of our eyes is an open analysis of Reb Shimon Leslie Mukt. Okay, so he doesn't hold of Bigu. We understand very well why he doesn't hold of Bigu. He knew going into Shabbos that there's a chance that situation would change. He put a very limited volume of oil into the Nair and it's going to extinguish itself. Let's say it's an 8-hour candle, whatever it might be, 10 hours, so Shabbos morning. He doesn't expect it to be lit anymore. Or he knew that the guardian put out the... Whatever it might be, he anticipated that it'll... But what happens in the case of Dachya Biyadai? In a case where he did an action which clearly indicates that he has no intention of reversing the action. On the other hand, if you look at the object itself, the Cheftz is still roy. The seeds have not taken root yet. You may have to wash it off a little bit. It's got some dirt on it, but it's edible. If you take, for example, the case of the Grogos v'tzimukim, again, they're getting a little bit sour, but they're not absolutely sour. They're still edible right now at this stage. You know, if they become absolutely sour and they're unedible, and you'll walk out with a bellyache, that's a different story. Then it's not even an ochel anymore. But we're talking about something that's suitable as is. It has a shame ochel. The beged per se, if not for the fact that he threw it in the rubbish, would have been considered a kli. It's a beged, it's not mukta. And then, remember the case that I spoke to you about a million times, Tamar de Iska, the dates that he packages for marketing. That's how he makes his living. He sells bushels of dates. But now he decides he doesn't have enough for his table. Once again, is the act of packaging the dates, is that considered dachye biyodayim? And even Reb Shimon would accept mukta. Omalei, so Reb Yochanan responds to Reish Lakish in... I'm sorry, scratch that. That was a bad mistake. Ein, you know, the difference between a chirik and a tzera here. Ein mukta l'Reb Shimon. This is the most extreme formulation of Reb Shimon Lekul. Thank you. We'll all start on the plane. I don't know.
Dangerous places.
Yeah. No, they have cold air coming in on the plane. Anyway, I don't know if that's what happened. But I was feeling great until I got on the plane. So now, Amalei, Ein Muktzel Reb Shimon. Ella, but wait a minute, Ella. There's always going to be an Ella. There's always every rule has its exception. Shemen shebener bishashu dolik. Does anybody remember what the status? We had six different categories of muktzah. What? Which categories do we have in mind that even Rav Shimon accepts? And this is the candle while it's lit. Does anybody know what that's called? Anybody remember? You may take out your page with the Beis Yosef. Well, we're almost up to mitzvah, not yet there. But muktzah machmas, what's the opposite of mitzvah?
Isur.
Muktzah machmas isur. Because if you take the oil while it's lit, you violate which malacha? Kibud. Extinguishing is one of the 39 malachas. So shemen shebener bishashu dolek, as long as the ner is lit. Even Reb Shimon agrees that you're not allowed to enjoy the benefits of the Shemen. Rabbi Meir, you may remember, not Rabbi Meir, sorry, Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, the son of Reb Shimon, went even further. He was willing to accept that even while the candle is lit, if some of the oil drips out and you receive it in a receptacle, that's not mukta. But that far Rav Shimon didn't go. Rav Shimon says as long as the candle is lit, you know very well you have no way, no access to get the oil. That would be a violation of Lechaz Kibui, and the oil is mukta. But after the candle goes out, if it was a limited volume of shemen that you put in, then we don't hold from mukta, we don't hold from migu, says Rav Shimon, and it's no longer mukta. But now the Gemara is saying, as long as the candle is lit, that's called mukta machmas isur. And that category of mukta, even Rav Shimon accepts. Hoyel. Okay, now we get to what Shmuel was talking about before. Hoyil v'hukta l'mitzvos.
Where is that?
Okay, so when we get the technology, Harvey, it will be a lot easier for me to show you where it is. Ben, you're able to help sure. Harvey out there, so... Hoil. Okay, we're both saying now these words actually, have to be underlined.
Because
one page back. And then there's something called Hagor Hitzionim. It's right to the right of that.
Right.
Hoil v'hukta l'mitzvaso hukta l'isuro.
Here it is. I've got it here. Look. It's here.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So what is going on here in this sugya? The Gemara is saying the following. There's A plus B, and we need both of them in order to have a situation in which even Rav Shimon accepts the Isur Mukta. What's A and what's B? A is hukta l'mitzvaso, and B is hukta l'isuro. In other words, the status of the shemen, as long as the ner is dolek, is mukta because of the overlap of two variables, each of which moves us in the direction of mukta, but it's not sufficient. We need, you know, it's a requirement, but it's not sufficient to say A and to say B. But when we have both of them, A plus B, that generates mukta even according to whom?
No,
sure. So A is called huktzel mitzvaso. Now we're going to soon see that huktzel mitzvaso is a sugya in Masechta Sukkah, which deals with those parts of the sukkah that are designated for the mitzvah of sukkah. Let's mention a few possibilities. We can talk about the defanos, the walls of the sukkah. We can talk about the schach on top of the sukkah. We can talk about the noi sukkah that you put apples and pears or whatever you like to beautify the sukkah. All that was designated for the mitzvah of sukkah. So too, let's say you light a candle on Erev Shabbos. That also is a candle of mitzvah. Why? Because we have a mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles. We'll have Chanukah also, we discussed, is a huktzel mitzvah. So. And the Gemara is going to derive in Masechta Sukkah on Daf Tes from a pasuk in Chumash that just like something is hegdesh l'mizbeach and you're not allowed to enjoy any benefit from it, it's consecrated for God, so too in mitzvah, when you consecrate something for a mitzvah, you're not allowed to have personal benefit from it. That's called huktzel mitzvaso. And it's a funny kind of halacha because it's so similar to mukta and yet it's so different than mukta. First of all, it would apply the whole yontif, even on Chol HaMoed. Now, Chol HaMoed, you know, there's no... I mean, there are certainly Suri Malacha, but generally speaking, Malacha is Mutta. So, if the nature of the day is Chol, that's not what we call Mukta in the classical sense. You know, we always identify Mukta and associate Mukta with Kodesh. Here, in the case of Huktzel and Mitzvah, so let's say Chanukah, for example. In all likelihood, 7 out of the 8 days of Chanukah are Chol, and yet there's something called Muktzah. Because once you put the Ner and the Shemen in the Ner, that becomes Muktzel and Mitzvah. Even though it has no relation to Kedusha Sayom, to the sanctity of the dead. In the case of an Ner Shabbos, we have both Huktzel and Mitzvaso, because you designated this Ner as a Ner Shabbos L'mitzvah, and we have Muktzel Isuro because of the Isur Shabbos. And that double header contributes and generates Muktzah even according to Rav Shimon. The implication is that if you would have had Huktzel Isuro without Huktzel Mitzvaso, or the flip side, Huktzel Mitzvaso without Huktzel Isuro, then it would not be Muktzah. It's only the overlap of two.
Just structurally, neither element is enough of itself, but combined is necessary.
Correct.
And sufficient to create the...
Correct. They're both necessary, but each condition is insufficient. It only becomes sufficient when you have both conditions met. It's number one, Huktzel Mitzvaso, and number two, it's Huktzel Isur. Now, if you take this Gemara literally, then we're going to have to rip a page out of the Talmud Bavli and throw it in the rubbish. And that's a Gemara in Masechta Sukkah that tells us that during the course of Sukkot, you're not allowed to enjoy the benefits for your own personal purposes of any of these parts of the Sukkah. For example, I need an apple. And there's no apple. The only apple is the one that's hanging from the Schach, which I designated going into Yontif as Huktzel Mitzvah of Noi Sukkah. Does Rav Shimon reject all that? Because Rav Shimon requires both the overlap of Huktzel Mitzvah and Huktzel Isuro? What was Rabbi Yochanan mean? What did he have in mind? The Lesle Huktzel Mitzvaso? Does Rav Shimon hold that if it's only Huktzel Mitzvaso, condition number one, but it's not Huktzel Isuro, then it's Mutter Vatanya? What about the Brisa? This is in the Gemara in Sukkah. The Sugya starts in Daf Tes, it goes on to Daf Yud in Sukkah. Sichecha Kehilchasa. He puts up the Schach the way he has to. All the requirements of Schach. The Itra, and he beautifies it, Bikramim, by putting tapestry or different kinds of woven garments that are artistically beautiful.
What
was Stinim are sheets, Mitsuyarim that were painted. They used to paint artwork on sheets. Vitalaboa Gozim, or perhaps he was hanging walnuts from the top of his schach. Afarsikim are peaches, Shkedim are almonds, Rimonim are pomegranates. Afarchale Shel Anovim, he put little small clusters of grapes. Atara Shel Shibolim, Yenos Ushmanim, Slussos. I mean, these are all different kinds of Noi Sukkah that were very common in the place. Asur Listapik Mehen, he's not allowed to benefit from them for his personal use. Ad Motzoi Yontif Achra. Right, Motzoi Yontif Achra means that we go from the 7th day of Sukkot straight into Shmini Atzeres, and Chutzlots we tag on another day, which is the 9th day, that's what we call Simchas Torah. And until after Simchas Torah, he's not allowed to benefit from any of these beautiful peaches and walnuts and whatever he put on the sukkah. Now, the next part of the brisa is a little bit more complicated. It requires a lot of study. That's called in Hisna Lehem Akolafi Tno. If, let's say, before Yontif, he decides, you know what, right now I'm going to put this peach up on top of my schach and beautify my schach, but sometime during Yontif I may decide that I have to eat the peach. You know, so he already anticipated that maybe he won't have enough peaches to eat during Yontif. But in any event, so that tonight is meaningful. Okay, but in any event, what's most important for us is that this brisa teaches the principle of huktzel mitzvasa. And keep in mind, we're talking about even chol hamoed. So we're not talking about huktza muktza machmas iser. There's no iser here. You know, you see, if it was yontif, you might have another problem. And that's what's called meleches soser. If you want to take things off the sukkah, again, you have to know a lot about meleches bona, which is the flip side of soser, building, construction, that if it's part of the construction, it becomes bottled to the sukkah, then you're not allowed to take it away. But now we're talking about chol hamoed. And chol hamoed, there is no meleches soser. So there's no huktzel mitzvasa. And yet it remains books until after we say the ninth day of Yontif. Why is that so? Does that mean that this price is against Rabbi Shimon? So Gemara says, yeah, let's check that out. Umimai de Rabbi Shimon he. How do you know that this price reflects the sheet of Rabbi Shimon? Maybe this price reflects a different shita, and Rabbi Shimon would reject muktzel mitzvasa. He only accepts muktzel mitzvasa when it overlaps with hukta li'isura. And the Gemara says, no, I know that this brisa is authored by Rabbi Shimon the Tani, because we learned in a brisa that Rabbi Chia bar Yosef brought this brisa makamei de Rabbi Yochanan. See, again, it's interesting because Rabbi Chia is a Tana and Rabbi Yochanan is an Amora, but they overlap. They lived at the same period. I mean, Rabbi Chia was much older. In any event, Rabbi Chia brought a brisa, and it says, "Ein notlim eitzim min asuk." You're not allowed to use the wood of the sukkah, the yontif, on yontif itself. And yontif can be Pesach, Shavuos, or Sukkot. And not only that, you might say, "Well, he can't take the wood from the sukkah because of aleches soser." But maybe on Chol HaMoed he'd be allowed to do it. So the Brisa says that even if the sukkah fell, it collapsed, so there's no longer an Iser Soser to take it apart. He's not destroying a structure. Ela min ha-samach lo. Rabbi Shimon Mati. Okay, so we're going to have a machlokas between the Tanakama, the first Tana, and Rabbi Shimon about whether or not you're allowed to take the wood of the sukkah if the sukkah fell. But Vishavim, but the Brisa says that both the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon agree, Bisukkah sachag bichag shehi asura, that during the 7 days of the Chag, there is an Isur Muktzah. Now, I don't know what the Gemara means here. Does the Brisa mean that it's Muktzah because it's a structure? But again, if it fell down, if it collapsed, then it would no longer be Muktzah? Or are we saying no? That even if it fell and it collapsed, we still have an Isur Muktzah, because going into Yontif, it was designated for the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'sukkah. Again, we have in Hisna Olea Kolafitno that he can make a condition going into Yontif. But in any event, what do we have now? We've proven from this brisa that at least as long as the sukkah is up and running, it's structured, it hasn't collapsed, there is an Isur Muktzah. And even Rav Shimon agrees to that. Rav Shimon is only going to be matir in the case of a sukkah that collapses, and even then he's only matir min ha-samuch lo, which is min ha-chavilo sa-eitzim she-eino mi-guf binyan ha-sukkah al-somchin al-dofsnev v'adnaz, that support boards or pieces of wood that were only used for support, but they're not really part of the sukkah itself. They remain separate. And that's where Reb Shimon was matir. But Vishavan, but even Reb Shimon agrees that the sukkah itself during the days of the Chag is muktzah. So how can you tell me now that Reb Shimon is only in agreement that there's muktzah when you have an overlap of both muktzah machmas mitzvah and muktzah machmas isur? So the Gemara at this point, backtracks, and the Gemara says, no, there are two categories of muktzah that even Rav Shimon accepts. That's muktzah l'mitzvaso and muktzah l'isura. So it's not A plus B, but rather it's A or B. I, Rav Yochanan, just finished telling Reish Lakish in response to his question that Rav Shimon only agrees to muktzah in the case of Shemen Shebener. Hoel, the reason why Shemen Shebener, as long as it's lit, is muktzah is A, because it's huktzah l'mitzvaso, and B, because it's huktzah l'isuro. So it sounds like Rav Yochanan's response to Reish Lakish is that Rav Shimon only agrees if you have both conditions, A plus B. Rav says, no, that's not what Rav Yochanan had in mind. But rather, what Rav Yochanan had in mind is Ke'ein Shemen Shebener Ka'amrino. What Rav Yochanan was saying about Reish Lakish is that when do we have a Muktzah Machmas Isur? When it's similar to Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah. Is Hoel the Huktzah Mitzvaso Huktzah Le'isuro? Which means the following, that Rabbi Yochanan didn't mean to say that you need both, an overlap of both, Huktzah Mitzvaso and Huktzah Le'isuro, in order to generate Muktzah, according to Shimon. But rather, he meant a certain kula. And you could be lenient in a case of Huktzah Mitzvaso if it's no longer suitable for the mitzvah. So let's say, for example, the sukkah collapses. At that point, you're allowed to benefit from the pieces of wood of the sukkah. Same thing, says Rabbi Yochanan in Rabbi Shimon. If the ner is extinguished, it's no longer muktzah machmas isur.
So under these conditions, then these seeds and these eggs would be muktzah according to Rav Shimon, unless a wind blew the seeds up to your doorstep.
I don't think that's what he's saying over here. I think that Rabbi Yochanan's response to Reish Lakish's question about the chitim and the beitzim is that the only case that Rav Shimon agrees to muktzah is muktzah machmas isur, which doesn't apply neither in the case of chitim because it's before Ashrasha, nor in the case of beitzim because the beitza was already born before Shabbos. But the question the Gemara is raising here is, did Rav Yochanan mean to say that the one case that Rav Shimon is moded to and accepts muktzah is muktzah machmas isuro, when in addition to being muktzah machmas isuro is also muktzah l'mitzvaso? The Gemara initially understood Rabbi Yochanan is saying you need both, it's got to be an overlap. The Gemara rejects that, and the Gemara is saying no, either or, either it's huktzah mitzvaso or it's huktzah l'isura. I'll just read to you what he says. And he says
it's the opposite.
Huktzah l'mitzvaso l'mitzvah ner Shabbos is huktzah l'isura d'hainu rak l'zman shaner osur b'kibui. She came near Shal Shabbos. Kishetam Zman Isu Dainu Shaner Nechba Tama Zan Mitzvasa. So, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan was saying that I have a parallel case to the case of the sukkah that collapsed. And what's that? That's the ner that extinguishes itself. It's no longer the mitzvah. Just like a sukkah that collapses, you can't sit in the wood, you know, the beams of sukkah that are, you know, landed on the ground. It's not a sukkah. So too, as soon as the ner is extinguished, then it's like the sukkah that collapses, and the element of huktzah mitzvah is removed. And why did Rabbi Yochanan use the terminology Hoel v'huktzah mitzvaso huktzah l'isuro, which sounds like you need both conditions? All he wanted to convey is that the ner is only muktzah as long as it's huktzah mitzvaso. Right? So huktzah l'isuro means you can't touch the shemen because in doing so you would extinguish the light. Now that the light is already extinguished, you're allowed to touch the Shemin, according to Rav Shimon, and the Ner. it's no longer muktzah. And the same logic applies to huktzel mitzvasa, that even though the snare was at the same time huktzel mitzvasa was dedicated for the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos, nevertheless, that's as long as the Ner is lit. Once the Ner is extinguished, it's no longer huktzel mitzvasa.
I don't get the either or.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm saying
what do you mean the either or?
First of all, it's a contradiction. It can't be. He couldn't have. You can't say he needs both, or he needs either or. I mean, that's a contradiction. So I'm not following the logic.
What I'm saying is initially the Gemara, which the Gemara is going to backtrack, took the position that you need both.
Okay, understood.
The Gemara says that's not so.
And if one of them's missing, therefore it's not muktzah.
Correct. Right. And the Gemara says that's not so because Rav Shimon holds in the case of sukkah that as long as the structure is up and running,
okay, it's a mitzvah.
It's a huktzel mitzvah, so and you're not allowed to benefit from it.
Okay.
And that applies even on Chol HaMoed when there's no huktzel isura. So it must be that Rav Shimon accepts either or, as you say, and therefore huktzel mitzvah, so alone, independent, would be sufficient to generate the isur muktzah. So why then we go back to our original formulation, Rabbi Yochanan's answer to Reish Lakish? Why do Rabbi Yochanan say Reish Lakish Hoyel v'huktza l'mitzvaso huktza nami l'isura? What was he trying to convey over there? He misled us into thinking that you need both huktza l'mitzvaso and huktza l'isura, which is not so. So more answers. He wanted to show you that in these two categories of muktza, each of which is independent of the other, there's a termination point. In the case of huktzel isuro, the termination point, which means you remove the isur, is when the candle goes out. In the case of huktzel mitzvah, likewise, when the candle goes out, that terminates and completely undermines and neutralizes the isur of huktzel mitzvah. In the parallel case in sukkah, once the sukkah collapses and the mitzvah terminates, you're allowed to benefit from. So it means the following, that you may recall, I don't know, Don, if you were with us at that day, that we discussed something called an oser and a matir. I don't know, maybe you were there. So what Rav Yochanan wants to impress us with is even in the one category of muksa that Rav Shimon accepts, which is huktzel mitzvaso or huktzel isuro, as two branches or parallels to this idea, there is a matir. And what's the matir? When the chefta, the object, is no longer dedicated to the mitzvah, no longer dedicated to the isur. When I remove that cause of muktzah, which means in the case of muktzah that it's designated for a mitzvah, in the case of isur it's designated for an isur. Once having removed that cause, I have a matir, and the isur muktzah is gone. And in that discussion that we had a few weeks ago, we went through the Harei Kedem, Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion that, and he based himself on the Tosus, that mukta, once it's chal forever and ever. You need a matir. It's not like chametz, which was only nesa from the get-go for 7 days. So you might think that in a parallel way, mukta is only designated, it's only also as long as that 24-hour period of Shabbos exists. No. Rav Soloveitchik said you need a matir. That was the Bein HaShmosh is going out of Shabbos. If you here too, we have a matir when the candle goes out. When the light goes out, that's a matir. It removes the Isur Muktzah. So first it removes the Isur Muktzah Machmas Isur, because there's no longer an Isur to take that Shemen. And number two, it removes the Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah, because there's no longer a Mitzvah of a candle that's lit, because it's no longer lit
for a purpose.
Why can't you say, I don't want to beat something to death, but yeah. I'm still not following the logic of the either or. Why can't you say that the language means that while it's designated as set aside for a mitzvah, it's therefore designated to be prohibited? So in other words, huksa l'isur is not the same as muksa. Maybe they're trying to fit it into the category of muktzah too hard.
Wait, one thing is apparent. From the language of Rabbi Yochanan, he's definitely finding some sort of combination of huktzah mitzvah and huktzah isura. Now, how far is he going with this combination? Is he saying that we need both of them, A plus B? So the Gemara thought so, yes, and then the Gemara rejects that and backtracks. But now the Gemara says, so what is this comparison or what word am I looking for?
Hankish.
Yeah, but I'm looking for an English word, correlation. And that's what factor correlates or somehow gives us a connection, a relationship between these two categories of books. And now that you've established that these two categories are independent categories, so why did Rabbi Yochanan use the word ho'il? The word ho'il in Rabbi Yochanan's language means that there's some bearing between the two, that one bears on the other. So the Gemara says the bearing is on the matir. That just like as far as the Isser we have a matir because the candle went out, even as far as mitzvah is concerned, we have a matir because once the candle goes out, it's no longer dedicated to a mitzvah. Itmar Nami, Omer Abchiyo Bar Abba, Omer Ab Yochanan, Ein Muxel Rabbi Shimon, Elke Ein Shemen Shebener, Bishashuhu Dolik. And now, what we have to add here is the following, that when does Rav Shimon say this mukta? Only as long as the shemen is lit. Right? As long as it's lit. Because as long as it's lit, it's dedicated to what, Rabosai? To the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. However, what's the flip side of Bishashu Dolek? When it's extinguished, it goes out. Then it's mutter. And hova huktzol mitzvasol huktzol isuro, meaning that just like in the case of muktzol machmas isur, according to Rabbi Shimon, once you remove the isur, you remove the mukta. So too in huktzol machmas mitzvah, according to Rabbi Shimon, once you remove the dedication for the mitzvah, then you remove mukta. I just want to take a minute to read something out loud here in the Masifta. He writes, Ulam besukas hachag besukas hachag shehaktsoas eitzel v'noya hi avor kol hachag shekei mitzvah nimsheches kol chimag moder of shimon shafil b'chol moed kvartam zman isura sharei sosrim sukkah b'chol shal moed mikol makom hino teres Asura l'chol yimei achag kevin she'adayin zman mitzvasahu. So let me just summarize that very important point he's making. He's saying that even according to Rav Shimon, when you dedicate the sukkah for the mitzvah of sukkah, which means the walls of the sukkah, the boards and the schach and the nice sukkah, the beautiful embellishments of the sukkah, that Isur Mukta remains for the entire balance of the Chag, even on Chol HaMoed. Now, what's the Chiddush of Chol HaMoed? On Chol HaMoed, there's no longer an Isur with regard to the Mukta, because there's nothing prohibiting you from taking apart a Sukkah on Chol HaMoed. There's no Isur. But nevertheless, it remains asur. Why? Because it's still considered the zman of the mitzvah. In other words, it's still designated for the mitzvah. However, if the sukkah falls, that removes the isur mukta. And why is that? Because it's no longer suitable for the mitzvah. And that's what we see here in this braisa that we just learned, which is quoted by Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Chiya, that according to Rabbi Shimon, only as long as the Ner is Dolek, it remains Mukta. But once it's extinguished, it's no longer Mukta. And what's the next line in the Gemara? Everybody should get excited about this. Omer Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, Ein Muksel Rabbi Shimon El Grogros, Mitzimukim Bilvat. The only case that Rabbi Shimon is Moded Mukta, in addition to Muktzah Machmas Isur and Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah, which we've already established, is the case of Grogos Vitzivukin. Why? Because what does he do when he places it on the roof? What does he indicate, Rabosai? That he's not going to eat them. He has no interest in eating them until finally they dry up. But as long as they're not dried and they're very sour. So this is called Hesech Hadas, if you remember this phrase, even according to Reb Shimon. Why? Because Dachye Biyadayim, when he takes the fruits and he puts them up, actively places them on top of the roof in a situation where they will become very sour, and they're not roi lachila at that point, meaning most people would not eat it. If you were very desperate, you would eat it. It's still edible, but you wouldn't normally consider it edible. That's considered mukta, even according to Rabbi Shimon. And why is that? Because it's dachye biyadayim. Now, the Gemara a little bit later on is going to mention explicitly this category of dachye biyadayim with regard to grogos v'tzivukim. We've already seen the concept of dachye biyadayim earlier in this daf on Menhem and Aleph with regard to Reish Lakish's question to Rabbi Yochanan. And that were the two cases. Those were the two cases of what? Of chitim shezar mekarka beitzim she nesudin tachas tarnagoles. Rabbi Yochanan seemed to imply that in those two cases, Rabbi Shimon would not accept mukta, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Shimon is that dachye biyadayim does not generate mukta according to Rabbi Shimon. But now, we're saying in the name of Shmuel a whole different approach in the case of Grogos Vitzivukim, that since he was Dachi V'Yadayim, even Rav Shimon agrees that it's Mukta. So at this point we're at a crossroads where we have two options in front of us. We could either say that Shmuel's arguing on Rabbi Yochanan, but that's a little bit odd, because if Shmuel's arguing on Rabbi Yochanan, why did he introduce the case of Grogos Vitzivukim? He should have just argued with Rabbi Yochanan, against Rabbi Yochanan, the cases of Chitim Shezar Bekarka and Beitzim Tachas HaTarnagolas. So it would seem rather that the second alternative is more attractive, that even Shmuel agrees that in the cases of Chitim Shezar Bekarka and Beitzim Anasunos Tachas HaTarnagolas, Rav Shimon is matir, and that's not called mukta, and somehow that's different than the case of Grogos Vitzivukim. Why should that be so? Why is that different from Grogos Vitzivukim? In both cases, it would seem that it was dachye biyadayim,
because he could no longer eat them. That's
why. Very good. So, Harvey, what you just said was said before you by none other than the Sfas Emes. You heard of the Sfas Emes?
Yes.
He was the Ger Rebbe. I'll read to you what he says over here. This you'll find, Ben, if you have footnote number Lamed Dal.
Got it.
And the second paragraph in that footnote. And he says the following. Bizman sha'a grogos vatzimukim einom re'uyim. They're no longer edible, and therefore also the taltor. And then he goes afar and he says the following. V'afili achar shenis yabshu, if you see that on the third line. He says, even after they become completely dry. And when did they dry? During the course of Shabbos. Is that's called mukta. Masha Enkin, in the cases of Chitin Shazar Makarka and Beitz and Tachsatanagoles, there he's trying to improve the chitim and the beitzah, right? By growing something or by hatching the egg and so forth. But he's not making it worse. The paradox of Grogos Vitzivukim is that you know, if he would arrest the process midway before it actually reaches the state of his yabshu, he's working against his interests. He's taking fruits that are edible and he makes them into non-edible. That's called dachye biyadayim. But other than that, it's not called dachye biyadayim. Now there's one more footnote that I wanted to show you. And that's footnote number Yudalid. And he asks the following question. Rabbi Yochanan went very far. He was very dramatic. And he said that the only categories of muksa that Rav Shimon accepts are the categories of muksa machmas mitzvah and muksa machmas isur. What about muksa of grogos v'tzimukim? Why didn't that come to play over here? Why didn't Rabbi Yochanan mention that case? And that's the subject, if you take a look on Menhayim and Aleph of Tosus Dira Maschil, Ella Shemen Shebener. He says, eight lines down in that Tosus, Tema Luri. You have that? Maybe you can underline that or something. De amai nokat shemen shebener tvei. Why was he more interested in the shemen shebener? Havile leminkat a muksel of shemen el grogos vitzimukin. De dummy tvei lechitim shezorim. De lois katsoi lo machmas mitzvah lo machmas isur. You know, if Rabbi Yochanan wanted to say to Reish Lakish that in those two cases of Chitim Shezorah Mekarka and Beitzim Shetach Santar, in those, Rabbi Shimon holds there's no Mukta, because Rabbi Shimon only accepts one category of Mukta, so then it would have been more precise for Rabbi Shimon to quote a case of Mukta that's very similar to the cases of Chitin and Beitza, and that would be the case of Grogos v'Tzimukin. Does everybody see that? In the case of Chitin Shezorim B'Karka, it's before Hashrasha, or in the case of a Beitza Tachas HaTanagolos, there's no Iser or Mukta. I'm sorry.
I was just going crazy.
There's no Isur involved in taking away the Chitim because it's before what?
Hashrasha.
There's no Isur in taking the egg away from the Tarnagolas. It's no violation of Lecha Shabbos. So, and there's certainly no mitzvah involved here. So why did Rabbi Yochanan mention, well, Rabbi Shimon only has muktzah in the case of muktzah machmas mitzvah, muktzah machmas Isur. Why didn't he discuss a more
similar,
correct, a more similar comparison? When Reish Lakish raised the question about Rav Shimon in the cases of Chitim and Beitza, he was talking about Dechia B'Yadayim. And now Rabbi Yochanan is saying, no, this is not mukt. When does Rav Shimon have mukta? In the case of Grogos v'Tzimukim, that's the real McCoy Dechia B'Yadayim, but not the cases of Chitim and Beitza. Tema L'Ri, etc., etc. He says, the Lekel maybe the summer of Yochanan of Shimon ain't Muksa the Grogos v'Tzimukim. He's not willing to say that Rav Yochanan holds that Rav Shimon is mater grogos v'tzimukim. Tosfos has clear proofs that Rav Shimon is moder in the case of grogos v'tzimukim. And guess what Tosfos answers? Nothing. He has no answer. He leaves it as an open-ended question. So getting back to this footnote, and I know I'm keeping you overtime, but just to make up for missing a week. He says, "Hikshu betosus amai ol Reb Yochanan ein muktzel reshul el shem shemener shosu machmas isulogar el begrogus v'tzimukim halo tam isum shal chitim v'tzbeitzim," which is the havmid of Reb Yochanan of Reish Lakish when he asked the question. Dome le grogus v'tzimukim. It's not similar to shem and shemener. V'lo tirt. Pretty sad. Oh, but then he quotes the Ritva. Ritva wants to take a stab at this. Shav Yochanan Hevi Khan Raketa Isur Shal Shem Shebiner Kevet Shetama Isur Shal Hachitu Vabetzim Hu Ketam Ha Isur Shal Shem Shebiner Shekeina Shem Shebiner Nesar Mishum Shaosul Chaboso B'Shabbos Chena Tam Shrei Shlokish Estapik Harim Yesh Lesser sachita beitzim machmas shebemaseu miskamin liosra shehu savar sachita miashrishu ba beitzim yafrichu afrochem liosra. Well, both say, I don't know what to make of this. This is wild. So I'm going to leave that for you to work out. I can't. He's saying a whole new pshat in chitin and beitza. He says that the man who planted this wheat, the seed, he intended that it would take root and therefore become muktzah machmas isur. So he actually actively created muktzah machmas isur according to his mindset. Now he changes his mind. But in his original mindset, he certainly had no intention of ripping it out. He wanted it to take root. So therefore, he's creating, in his mind at least, Mukta Machmas Isa. Now he changes his mind. He wants to take it out before Hashrosha. So that's similar to the case of Shemin Shebin Ne.
I'm seeing a similarity with Tamar Shisra. He says, like,
I take one of these? Who's this? Your son?
No. He says, I'm packaging these dates only for sale, for nothing else. And all of a sudden he says, actually, I need them for my Shabbos. Because the question is, like, what his intention was at the time of the packing or at the time of the.
So it's interesting because in that case, Reb Shimon is matir, as we'll soon see. I mean, not today. We'll see that tomorrow, believe me. But it means that the fact that he intended it, you know, for market, that's not enough to make muktzah according to Reb Shimon, because he always has in the back of his mind the possibility that maybe he'll need it for his table. Here, in this case of chitin, Reish Lakish is arguing in one side, again, he vacillates, but that since he intended to create the hashrasha, he himself is making it into a muktzah machmas isur, which even Reb Shimon would agree. That's the Ritva. Again, I don't want you to ask me any questions about this Ritva because I've never seen it and it's brand new to me and it doesn't make any apparent sense to me. But the one question that we have to grapple with, even if we can't really adequately answer the Reis question in Tosus, but one question that we definitely have to address is what's the difference in Rabbi Yochanan's frame of reference between chitim and beitz on the one hand, which is not muktzah, and grogus and tzimukim on the other hand, which is muktzah. In both cases, it's dachya b'yadayin.
There's also the idea that Rav Shimon would allow these grapes on the roof if it was known for sure that these grapes and dates would dry out on Shabbat to a suitable level to be eaten.
Right,
then he would allow you to eat them.
But not before they dried out.
Right.
So the reason why Rav Shimon accepts muktzah,
like, as comparison to these dates that you set aside for selling in the market, which are already good to eat.
Right.
That's why he allows those. Same too with these ones on the roof. He will allow you to eat them if they become good to eat.
If and when they become good to eat. But my question to you, David, is the following. Before they became good to eat, Rav Shimon accepts that as muktzah. Do we show him assume that that's undeniable, that Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't question it, that Rabbi Shimon certainly would be oser and would accept muktzah before the grapes became dry. Why is that different than the case of chit?
Just a second. Can you put them up there, Shabbos?
the fita of
Right, just give me 1 second, David. I'm going to listen to you first, but I just want to clear my brain before they're going to become. Yeah, go ahead. What do you say?
The fitim are continue to be edible. The seeds are good to go. They're edible.
Yeah.
Even though they're outside in the field, they're edible.
Right.
They were never kind of inedible like the stuff on the roof.
So here's the deal. If you put something aside, dechir v'yadayim, which eventually, with the passage of time, will no longer be edible. They will lose their edibility, if there's such a word.
They'll expire. They use by date, they'll expire.
And that's exactly why he puts them there. There's no jokes, there's no surprises here. He deliberately puts them in a place intending to leave them there, and they will rot away. That's what happens when you put a seed into the ground. It rots away. Or in the case of the efroach, which is certainly not something that's edible.
Let's say they change status. Because they're going to become a chick, or they're going to become a plant. So they're not rotting away, but they change their status.
I'm not sure I follow what you're saying. What I'm saying is that eventually the seed is going to rot away. And I'm going further than that. I'm saying that that's what his intention is. Now he changes his mark, and he decides he needs seeds for a salad, like you said. In the case of Groger's Vitzimukim, there, not only did he intend to have them right away, if we could use that term, meaning become sours, but that's what's going on right now.
Right.
You know, it's at this moment, when he wants to take the grogus and simukim,
they're not good edible.
They're not good edible.
Hate to use such a word on Rabbi Shimon, but that's what they were banished from show, inedible. Let's say tamari to iska were edible. The egg was already laid, it was edible. Everything else has a possibility of not remaining good. So only the grogus and simukim may not have a possibility of becoming good. Because they're sour to start with, right?
What do you mean that's how to start with? He put them up on the roof that you could have served them as wonderful, sweet grapes.
Okay.
I'm getting in the mood for grapes. but the point is that he knows very well they're going to become inedible, or as David says, good inedible, right? Is that what you...
I can't remember what I said.
Yeah, right. And now, even though it's not good inedible... and it's really, really sour, you would not serve it to your guests, but he wants to eat them.
Right.
He's desperate for whatever reason.
Unusual.
So that's not the same as chita. That's not the same as the beitza. Because in the case of the chita and the beitza, he wants to chop them before they become inedible.
Right.
They are now good edible.
Right.
All right? That's what we wanted. So these are the rudimentary rules that we have to work out for Rav Shimon. And eventually, we're going to have to connect Rav Shimon with the Migu issue about Ben Ashvashas and Ben Kolomayomo. And then in the more advanced stage, we're going to look at the Shulchan Aruch and try to draw the lines. Do we paskin like Rav Shimon? Do we paskin like Rav Yehuda? When do we accept Rav Shimon? When do we accept Rav Yehuda? Until finally we can walk out of here with some intelligent understanding that, you know, intelligence level of understanding books. Okay then? So we'll stop here.
Carl, if I can just make a couple of questions. I want to take my first